What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. On today's episode, I am joined by Kareem Helmy from Coinmetrics. Kareem and I have a great conversation about the research and data analysis that he is doing and the Coinmetrics team are doing to add value to the mining space. We cover the knots analysis that Kareem and his team did in May to the coin outflows and inflows that he's looking into currently. We also talk about mining pools, the good, the bad, the fuckery. And I hope you all enjoy everything that we discuss. If you do, please make sure that you leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And now we've got a message from our sponsor, and then we are on to the episode with Kareem. Enjoy.
Today's episode of the Hash Rate Podcast is brought to you by Compass. Compass is an intuitive platform serving all of your Bitcoin mining needs. If you are looking to buy the newest hardware at the best available prices, go to Compass and we can help you. If you want to buy secondhand hardware from trusted sources and have it shipped right to your facility, Compass can help you. And if you're looking for a trusted facility to host your hardware at the best rates available worldwide, Compass has got you covered. Head to minewithcompass.com today and our team of experts will get you set up to mine profitably ASAP. That's minewithcompass.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski and today I am joined by a very special guest. This guy has been doing some of the best mining research in the space since he came onto the scene. He like blasted onto the scene. It was like 18 months ago. But anyways, without further ado, welcome to the show, Kareem Helmy from Coinmetrics. Kareem, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Whit. Great to be here.
Happy to have you. I am really curious of your story and how you landed at Coinmetrics and what led you to mining. So why don't we dig into that a little bit? What were you doing before your role with Coinmetrics?
So I studied stats and machine learning at Carnegie Mellon, graduated in 2019. During my time there, I did an internship at a bank and one of my coworkers was, you know, really shilling some altcoins. My first thought was, this is really dumb. and then I started digging into it. I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. So I just started drinking the Kool-Aid from there. I started working on like in the crypto space my senior year on a couple of projects. One of which was some work with Coinmetrics as a client, building out the Exchange Flows product. And then, so I kept freelancing for about a year. Then in May, I put out a report on some nonce analysis with Coinmetrics around like hardware estimation, and then it joined full time.
Yeah, so I think the nonce analysis caught everyone's attention. That was a very unique data that you were compiling and putting together. What did you find interesting about doing that nonce analysis?
When Bitcoin miners try to perform proof of work, they're looking to find a value that creates a block header hash that's below a certain target. And this value is called a nonce. So if you map out Bitcoin's nonce distribution on a plot of the nonce value over time, you see these like really weird bands. Now, I wasn't the one to find these. This has been something that's been looked at for the last couple of years. But my work proposed a hypothesis that these bands were caused by the Bitmain Antminer S7 and S9 lines of mining rigs. And so then from there, we just tried to estimate how much of the network is powered by these rigs. So we found that at peak, it was about, 80% of the hash power? Mm-hmm. was provided by Bitmain S9s. Yep. And now it's floating, you know, between 13 and with the recent run up there may or may not have been an uptick. It's too soon to tell.
The S9s are, I mean, there's so damn many of them. And even now we're starting to see the inventory come back into the market from these machines that have been off for a long time. Obviously with Bitcoin where it is price-wise, it's profitable to mine with them again. And I think yesterday they're approaching $100 per unit for one of these S9s.
Absolutely insane. That's what quintupled in the last month.
Yeah, they were $23, $24 in October. I mean, they are, depending on your power rate, I think right now the break even for them, especially if you're running like a Brains OS, is like 7 cents per kilowatt hour. So they're really profitable almost everywhere now.
That's super competitive. Yeah, they're definitely like resilient. And I think a lot of people expected them to shut off completely after the last halving. Like it seemed like miners were trying to squeeze out the last profitability that they could by bringing them back online leading up to the halving. But so far that just hasn't borne out, you know, with the recent run up, and it's been a ride to watch for sure.
So when you're looking at the nonce analysis, was the whole purpose just to see what part of the network was was comprised of the S7s and S9s?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, we went into this with just a completely exploratory mindset. We were trying to build out our minor flows data, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But along the way, we were looking for some cool intermediary problems that we could address while we sorted out some of the kinks in the minor flows. And then we kind of just got pulled into this whole nonce analysis rabbit hole. We got really curious. Some members of the team, especially Antoine, had worked on it on similar topics previously. So really, I just like one night I was like, hey, let's try to estimate this backwards. Just we think we know what's causing this. And one of my friends really gave me a push that I needed on that side. But we made a couple of assumptions and got out these estimates. And so far, they seem to be borne out from like the empirical studies from CoinShares and Cambridge and other people who have surveyed miners.
CoinMetrics obviously is a very reputable one. The research that's done by the company is used by many. So why the focus on mining? Like, what is it about mining that is attractive to a CoinMetrics? And why is there now the added focus there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so historically, we've been more focused on like financial services. In the last year, I think we've gotten a lot of questions because of the halving. And so that's effectively why I came on was full-time, was to start working on these mining products. I mean, this is the short answer. It's not very exciting, but we had customer interest and then we decided to pursue that. I've also always personally been super interested in the mining space. It feels like one of the most under-researched parts of the industry for how like critical and, you know, it is the core of Bitcoin. So in my mind, that was always like a glaring thing that was just sticking out like, hey, let's look at this data.
Is this actually leading to more interest in mining from your clients? Are you seeing that like, okay, the initial demand got us in the door and we started doing the research and now more of our clients are interested in what's going on in the mining space?
Absolutely. It's totally snowballed. You know, it's really exciting to see, but people do really seem to like the work that we're doing around nonce analysis. So we've gotten a lot of discussion around like providing tagged blocks for who's mining and stuff like that. And that's something that we are looking to pursue further down the line. And in addition, you know, like our Miner Flows product, what we're doing now is we're starting to track the flow of funds from addresses that are one hop out from the Coinbase instead mm-hmm. of just, you know, first spend, which has historically been what's been studied. And people really seem to dig that. Our first couple of metrics that we've released on this have been really promising and we're looking to build this out more.
Let's talk about that for anyone who may not fully grasp what that means. So when you're talking about one hop out, that's the transaction from the Coinbase wallet of the pool to the respective miner that's being paid out.
Exactly. Yeah. So we think of the Coinbase transaction itself as, you know, like the zeroth hop. And then the first hop is, like you mentioned, from the pools to the miners. And then the miners' transactions are then what we're looking to, you know, like track the flow of. Because there's kind of a history in this particular metric. Like there's a history of other attempts at quantifying this, just really quantifying a completely different thing, which has been like how frequently pools pay out their miners. But then they've like sold this as they're tracking the flow of funds from miners, you know, dumping on exchanges. And there's like a slight uptick in this. And then like, I don't know, the market goes down a little bit and then people like blame it on miners dumping. So we think of it kind of as a way to fight FUD and a little bit as just, you know, like a way to know what's actually going on.
Well, so now that brings up one of the sexiest topics in mining, if there are any sexy topics in mining. Virgin coins. You hear it every once in a while, like there's a premium for virgin coins. How do I secure virgin coins? You know, coins with no transaction history. And one of the interesting things that I think you're finding now is that a lot of these pools, they're paying out in other Bitcoins.
Yeah, so this has been a personal pursuit of mine at CoinMetrics. It's not something that we've productized yet, but I've just been, you know, going on block explorers and digging into these pools. You know, they effectively dox themselves by including the Coinbase tag. So if you just look at that, you can see like how they're transacting. And a lot of them are transacting exclusively with one entity, you know, in what makes it seem like a white label or you know, a proxy pool. So it's been a really interesting pursuit. We haven't had the chance to put out a full write-up or a product around it yet. I think it's really good for measuring hidden centralization and also for seeing just when things are weird, you know?
Yeah. If you're a miner, you're hoping to get those new coins, right? You want to generate the coins that have no transaction history. And if you're mining to a pool and they're, you know, in effect paying you out with old Bitcoins, then it kind of defeats the purpose. And plus it allows them to, you know, have that arbitrage opportunity to keep those new coins and then sell them at a premium to someone else later on down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like mining is a very opaque industry. I think that's pretty fair to say. And a lot of the business practices are, you know, if both parties didn't agree to this, they're shady at best. So I'm thinking of like off-band payments in particular, where mining pools will actually forego fees that users of the network are trying to transact in order to prioritize transactions from another party that they've entered into a contract with. Mm-hmm. And it's unclear if they're pocketing that spread or if they're, you know, distributing it out. If I had to guess, they're pocketing it. So off-band payments, like you're mentioning, keeping the more valuable Virgin coins to themselves instead of distributing out those out to the miners. I'm sure there's other stuff. It's a very competitive industry in that, like, those premia and margins that you're trying to squeeze out, like, there's some ways that you can bleed out an edge.
The opaqueness of the industry, I think, just comes down to the fact that there aren't a ton of people doing research on this. And on top of being opaque, it's also pretty complex. There's many different ways that the operators are able to work the system to their benefit, unbeknownst to pool participants. And there are a lot of good actors. So I don't want this to sound like, you know, the mining pools are just raking everyone over the coals. But I think that the work that you're doing and that other researchers are doing is going to help these businesses operate a bit more ethically. You mentioned the white labels. And this is something that, you know, I came to pretty quickly when I was looking at all of these pools. But it seems to me like there's really only 5 or 6 meaningful mining pools, and everything else is just a copy pasta of those.
Yeah, I mean, it sure seems that way. I'm not exactly sure on the exact number, but especially a lot of the smaller pools, they're just not real operations. They're white labeled. I'm not going to name names, but there is one group in particular that seems to be the primary white labeling entity. And, you know, that's kind of Bitcoin's social contract, like the only way to enforce it is through decentralization. So this opaqueness, it's not good.
So then, I mean, when it comes down to it, is centralization really dependent on where a miner is located, or is it more on the pool that they're using?
You know, I think a little bit of both. I'm not going to try to sell you on the, you know, like China controls all the miners, like that kind of FUD. That's not what I'm trying to get across here. But pools matter, you know, especially when everyone's using Stratum V1 these days. Like the mining pool really matters because they select the order of the transactions, they select which transactions are included in which blocks. And as it's currently structured, like, miners actually don't have a say in that. And sure, they can switch off the pool, and they do. We saw like a pretty large migration off of OKX pool. Mm-hmm. When they stopped paying out. But, you know, if you're trying to prevent like acute 51% attacks, decentralization at the pool level is really, really important.
You know, that OKX situation was a bit weird. It seemed almost like a transfer as opposed to people leaving. It was just like, oh, let's switch all of this hash rate to a different pool. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, I'm sure there was something that we're not privy to happening behind the scenes there. Not necessarily like maliciously, right? But just like there was some sort of coordination going on. Speaking for myself here, not Coinmetrics, but it seems relatively bizarre to me that they would all have chosen to migrate to Binance Pool, which is what seemed to have happened, as independent actors.
It's groupthink. I mean, they just, you know, they were all in a Telegram chat. They were just, you know, on the count of three, everyone switch. And that's just kind of how it went down, you know? I'm sure there's nothing more to it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's been really interesting to see. I mean, with the exchange pools coming in, obviously they have certain motives as to why they want to have mining pool operations. Binance obviously has captured a pretty good market share in their short time in the mining pool space. There's been questions as long as Binance has been in existence of how they do business, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that carries over to the way that they're operating their pool. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Miners love zero fees. I'm eager to hear any research that you may have that shines a light on what's going on with those exchange pools in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So I said I wasn't going to name names earlier. I was scamming. With Binance Pool, I think it's a really interesting question, right? Like, they really did seem to have come up out of nowhere. So like I was saying, I've gotten into recently just like digging into the payments that these mining pools are making. What I found is that up to when I conducted this analysis, they really only paid like one address with any significant amount of funds. And then if you dig into what that address was BTC.com, which is another major mining pool owned by Bitmain, which also owns AntPool and Via BTC. So, you know, if you take the pessimistic assumption here, which I'm not sure is the right assumption to make, but, you know, if you're trying to assess the worst case, this is pretty awful because you effectively have like 4 major mining pools owned by the same parent company, or, you know, Binance isn't owned, but operated, if you're making pessimistic assumptions here. So yeah, I mean, that's just hidden centralization. Like, there's no other way to put it. And if Binance Pool were a proxy pool, that wouldn't be amazing. Now,
why
literally
not?
The day after.
Why not? Why would them being a proxy pool not necessarily be good for the space? Is centralization the only reason?
It's really the lack of, to me, it's the lack of like transparency. So I think the big problem there is that like it's centralization. And if Bitmain and again, just speaking for myself here, not for my employer, if they weren't aware that people would object to this, they wouldn't go through all of this effort to obscure the fact that they're, you know, like they wouldn't jump through all these hoops to hide
right.
that they're controlling such a large chunk of the hash power if they weren't aware that this is concerning to users of the network. Like, we've seen this before, right? Like, that's the thing. Ghash.io did have 51% of the hash power a few years back. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of seen these like coordinated ad hoc agreements to limit the amount of hash power that a single participant provides, because this matters. That's kind of my view on it. Haven't honestly like fully unpacked my thoughts, but hoping to in the near future.
I mean, if you're a newcomer to the space, right, and you're looking at it and you're trying to compare these pools to each other and see, okay, this one has great fees, this one provides good services, and then you come to realize that they're all the same.
It is an oligopoly. So yeah, I mean, like Bitcoin, it's crazy because it is like this, you know, like hyper capitalist system, but high capital costs are high capital costs, and they do tend to lead to like entrenchment of established players. On that side, you know, like I think on this particular point, I can speak for some of the other team members. Like, we're really excited about Stratum V2. We think that it has the potential to just be absolutely amazing. And, you know, like, it kind of shifts the profits from off-band payments from the pools to the miners, where, you know, like, from a bunch of other perspectives, it's very, very good for the network's health. Mm-hmm. On that side, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Like, Bitcoin is still an experiment, and Bitcoin mining is still an experiment, even though it is, like, you know, one of the core tenets of the network. So really excited to see the space hopefully become a little bit more competitive.
Stratum V2 obviously will be helpful. I'm curious if the entrenched players will want to make any changes. That's the one thing that I look at, is anytime something new comes out into an industry, especially an industry as big and as profitable as Bitcoin mining, is there incentive to change, right? If it's just an altruistic motive, I think no. But I wonder, when is Stratum V2 set to release? Have they announced yet?
I'm not exactly sure on the timeline, but on the lack of adoption side, like this is an argument that I've heard a lot. And I think there's, you know, a good case to be made, and I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Stratum V2 is going to reach adoption by all the big players. But like, my counterpoint to that is that miners will demand it, because once miners begin to realize that, you know, off-band payments are such a large part of the potential pie, there's just gonna be demand for, especially the large miners who are, you know, mining blocks like reasonably consistently, like they're going to want to be able to take these payments that the pool doesn't get a cut of.
Yeah. Well, and you know, especially as margins continue to whittle down, every little bit counts. That's going to matter more and more. It puts our guys at Slush in a really good position.
And, you know, I'll say this as well. This is a personal thesis of mine. Like, in the long run, miners' costs are, you know, relatively fixed. Mm-hmm. And their revenue is very variable. And in the long run, if you're paying fixed and receiving floating, you will go bankrupt. It's not, you know, it's not going to be like tomorrow or next week, but it's just an inevitability. So what's really interesting about off-band payments is that they allow miners to enter into these kind of like more long-term contracts, which effectively allows them to hedge out their risks. And, you know, I think like that's going to accelerate the demand even more.
You guys recently, and I know you've been, you know, documenting and releasing internally your fact sheet, but yesterday was the first time that I got a chance to see it. It's pretty impressive. But how long have you guys been compiling all of this data?
You know, we've been tracking like hash rate and all of these network data metrics like since the company was started. We have like one Slack channel where we just share cool plots with each other. Everyone on the team is like reasonably looped in on the network data side, and everyone like tracks the markets. Like, so on the metrics side, you know, like I'll let the company name do the speaking on whether or not we're into that. But we are starting to kind of advertise more openly our hash rate and what we call observed work indexes, which we're hoping will be kind of like the foundation for measuring hash rate that'll be used for these hedging products. And of course, I'm talking about hash rate derivatives. So we're generally like pretty bullish. We, being me in this case, pretty bullish on derivatives in general. And I just think there's like a lot of opportunity in the hash rate space in particular to allow miners to like hedge out a lot of these like unforeseeable risks. And, you know, hopefully make running these operations a little bit easier, a little bit safer from a financial perspective.
They have to happen, right? I mean, such a big industry, it's inevitable, I think, that these derivatives products will eventually take hold. Have you guys spoken internally about when you foresee these becoming more widely adopted?
Yeah, I think by the time the next halving rolls around, you're going to need to have this kind of hedging in place. Every 4 years, the network just like gets so much more competitive. And, you know, like if prices continue to run up, maybe it'll never happen. During downturns, like you just need downside protection more than anything. And you need protection from the surges in hash rate that actually do come with a good price. So.
Sure. My curiosity is really around the buy side, right? I think there's a clear understanding of why the miners will need it, but who's going to take the other side of that trade? It seems like now there's these bespoke offerings, the one-offs here and there. But, you know, when I think of like a real market developing, the buy side has to be pretty constant. You know, there needs to be, you know, someone there to take a lot of these trades to, you know, have an attractive kind of volume that would, you know, would encourage a company to build and scale products like these. So do you think we're going to see that buy side come in?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question, right? Like miners should naturally be short hash price, or what the Luxor guys call hash price, and naturally long hash rate in these derivatives to hedge out the risk. But the problem is there's nobody who would take the other side of the position just out of like sheer necessity. Necessarily, and maybe the equipment manufacturers, but even that's quite a bit of a stretch, and there's only you know, a couple of those,
right?
And they also all like are tightly affiliated with mining pools, so even there isn't really that incentive. So yeah, that's a big question. My intuition is yes, just because there is just so much demand on the other side, and like I said, like miners should be willing to pay a substantial premium to pay fixed and receive fixed instead of to pay fixed and receive floating, and that premium could make this a pretty attractive trade.
Sure. Are you seeing any strange requests for your data?
Well, one thing I always get asked is like on the nonce analysis side, can you use it to identify other hardware? I wish I had a more convincing answer, because like my answer is like, you know, maybe.
Is that from people that want to see, are there like FPGAs or ASICs on certain altcoins?
Yeah. So, I mean, on the ASICs on altcoin side, we didn't do a full like quantification of it, but we were able to show pretty clearly when the ASICs came online on Monero. Mm-hmm. But no, more like, is there a way that, you know, so we now can measure the proportion of S9s on the network. Could you do that with S19s? You know, could you do that with like the what's miners? And I hesitate to say no, because like in a perfect world, the nonce distribution would look like evenly distributed static. And even as we started to see these like bands of empty space go away, it still looks weird. You know, there's like this really weird spacing in parts of the regions. And, you know, I've looked at it at the bit level, and there's like weird streaks of like bits that show up more than they should and ones that show up less than they should. But I also can't convincingly say yes, you know, because we just haven't been able to see that. So I think like, yeah, that's probably, I think the most interesting requests we've gotten have been around like quantifying other hardware.
I think that's like the big question that everyone wants to know. How are you able to quantify the number of any given machine that's on the network? I'm surprised there's not like a way to track these machines from the manufacturers through their life yet, like through the life cycle of those machines. Like if you have a car, right? If your car has a VIN, and at any point in time, that vehicle identification number can be used to see like, has the car been in any accidents? What repairs have been made? You know, how many times has it been bought and sold? All of that data is available. I'm surprised that doesn't exist yet for ASICs.
Yeah, and the team over at Luxor, I mean, like they're doing some amazing work around pricing with Compass. I'm not gonna plug your product, but—
Shill it, shill it, Kareem, let's go.
I mean, it's just making the space so much more transparent. I'm really, really happy to see like all of this work it's not disintermediating, but it is removing a lot of the opacity in secondaries markets and in these historically like really like these markets where you couldn't make money unless you like knew someone. So that's really exciting. And I think that is kind of like eventually going to lead to like better quantification on hardware. But, you know, in the meantime, we're kind of stuck using like breadcrumb trails that are left on the network.
True. You mentioned that you guys are continuing to work on the metrics that, you know, hopefully will become the benchmark. And you guys have, hey, look, you got a great track record for that. Coinmetrics, every time I'm watching CNBC, anytime they show a Bitcoin chart, Coinmetrics' name is right there next to it. So
yeah, I love to see that. Whenever we have like some billionaire shilling Bitcoin, it's always like our company name right behind it.
Yeah. What's the eventual adoption plan for these hash rate metrics that you guys are putting out? Where do you see them first getting used?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I'd love to see them used as like a benchmark for people to sell like OTC contracts against, perhaps on exchanges, for more like exchange listed derivatives. The work that we're doing around observed work, I think is one of the more interesting things. So, hash rate, like as it's constructed, you know, as it's measured indirectly from the network, it's not like a particularly interesting product to trade. You can generally directionally tell where it's headed. And if it's like late enough in the difficulty period, you can tell with like pretty high certainty where it's headed.
Yes.
And that just doesn't like really make for a good trading instrument. So one of the things that we've constructed as kind of like an experiment around that and hopefully a viable product is what we're calling observed work, which adds in a little bit more volatility. And it uses like a rolling hash rate estimate instead of the overall hash rate estimate. And it uses like the time to find the most recent block as kind of just directly inserting that volatility in there so that, you know, it makes for something that you can actually
trade.
Take risks on instead of just like, yeah, directionally guessing.
Well, I mean, over a long enough time period, right? The hash rate just goes up.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and that's like, I think right now, one of the pitfalls for adoption of the hash rate products is, I mean, yes, you want to hedge and it's smart to have a plan to lock in profits, but it's got to be really hard if you're running a big mining operation to consider hedging when, I mean, number go up is a very real thing. Right now, we're in a time when, I mean, why? After suffering a bear market, after spending millions on infrastructure, why would I now be cautious? Why would I now be conservative?
Yeah, I mean, it's the grasshopper in the ant, but there is going to be another bear market. Like it's,
you know, it's going to go up forever, Kareem. We're just, oh, it's straight to 100K.
Yeah, I would not complain if that were the case. and maybe it is, you know, like who am I to say? But there's always the chance that things turn south. And I think that's where hedging is. And look, if things go well, you're still going to have your yacht. You're still going to, you know, like drive in your Lambo. But if they go poorly, at least you're not going to lose the farm, you know?
Oh, man.
I think that's the case for hedging.
There you go. Well, that makes sense. Lambo or loss, your choice, you know?
You can have both. That's the thing, you know? So,
you know, with everything that you've been working on, it's been great to see more awesome data, you know, that's available to people in the space. I'm excited to hear, aside from the hash rate analysis that you guys are putting out and the data that's already out there, is there anything cool that you're working on that you can share with us that maybe isn't quite public yet?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a little bit on the DL, but I've been doing some work around miner to exchange flows. So like I mentioned, when I first joined CoinMetrics, like the product I was working on was measuring exchanges flows in and out. This has a lot of like implications for the amount of liquidity available. Mm-hmm. It's also a pretty good decentralization metric. What we're looking to do now is kind of, you know, like the natural like integration of these two products, which is to see how much our miners actually selling in a way that isn't pure FUD. Like, because we, you know, we have the technology. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's something that I think is really, really exciting. CoinMetrics is also starting to work on a lot of like, you know, it's a little less sexy, but a lot of back office tooling and like a blockchain search engine effectively that allows you to, you know, perform block explorer functionality, but programmatically more efficiently and in a way that's consistent across different networks. So I think that's all really exciting. I've used it myself a ton. Our miner flows are built on top of it. And I just can't wait for like the rest of the world to get to play with it a little bit.
I'm curious about the miner to exchange flows because I've got a personal theory that more than ever before, miners just aren't selling. They're well capitalized in different ways. I know that, you know, a lot of miners, rather than spending Bitcoin on their OPEX, they're just deploying additional capital, whether it's growth capital that they're raising or, you know, cash reserves in their treasury, they're not spending their Bitcoin.
I mean, miners are hella rich, right? Like that's definitely true. but
that's what we're going to call this episode, by the way. Miners are hella rich.
Yeah, let's do it. No, I mean, what we found is kind of like there's a convergence between inflows and outflows that's starting to happen. So inflows are naturally decreasing just because of the halvings and all of that. And outflows are also kind of, they're following them. So they're spending less. It's hard to say if it's just because of the gradual like maturing of the network and, you know, like the protocol mandated issuance or if they're actually hodling. The total supply held by both zero and one hop addresses, so miners and pools, like there was a big, big surge in this supply with miners like just like holding leading up to the halving. We've kind of seen it like start to return to its general trend of, you know, like slowly but surely going down as early entrants sell. So currently, sorry, that was a lot of data and no real thesis, but we don't have a granular view of what the most active miners are doing quite yet. If they're holding, if they're investing in new capital or anything like that. But what we have seen is like a pretty severe dampening in the spreads between the inflows and outflows. And what this seems to indicate is that like whatever they're doing it more consistently than they used to.
There's so much in this industry that we can dig into. I think that the longer that someone like you has to observe mining, I'm just excited to see what's coming. clearly the wheels are spinning. I mean, dude, in the last year, you've covered more areas that I think most people would just have not taken the time to look at. So, I mean, it's got to be cool having that kind of freedom from Coinmetrics to just dig into whatever's interesting.
Yeah, I really love my job. It's a little corny to say, but like I got hired for one thing. I ended up doing a completely different thing. Everybody clapped anyway, you know? And yeah, I've been focused mostly on mining, but I've also been doing, you know, like a little bit of work on our other products. Like I mentioned on our search engine, Atlas. I think like we're building out like a really, really cool and unique product suite. And I'm just pretty excited to be on this rocket that's on top of another rocket, which is Bitcoin.
Rocket on a rocket. Well, Kareem, on that note, man, what I'd love is before we wrap up here, let everyone know where they can find you and where they can get more information about your research.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm at Kareem Help Me, and at Coinmetrics is our corporate handle. So definitely drop us a follow. We also have a newsletter. It's free and gives a lot of insights into like what's going on the network and in the markets. It's called State of the Network. If you just go, coinmetrics.substack.com, that's where you'll find it.
Awesome. And we'll have all of the relevant links in the show's notes. So anyone who's interested, just hop down there and you can link right through to Kareem and Coinmetrics and their newsletter. Definitely follow this guy's work. He has been killing it. I'm excited to see what you come up with next, Kareem. But thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Whit. It's been a pleasure.
Open invitation, man. I'm happy to chop it up with you anytime.
Really appreciate it. And yeah, to listeners, just feel free to slide into my DMs. I'm always happy to chat about Bitcoin.
There you go, slide into his DMs. had to do it. Anyway, so the listeners of the podcast, thank you guys for tuning into the show. We'll talk to you all again very soon. Thanks for listening to Hashrate Podcast, a Hashrate Media production. If you enjoy great mining content, head over to hashrate.com today and register for Difficulty Adjustment, our free weekly newsletter providing the most actionable information on Bitcoin and mining. That's hashr8.com. Also, remember to head over today and give Hashrate a follow on Twitter. That's at Hashrate, at H4SHR8. Thank you again for tuning into the show. We'll talk to you all again very soon.